Welcome to the Maria Heller Show, the internet's original podcast. Since the year 2000, always ahead of the curve, always on your side. A true warrior for truth and justice, Maria and her guests leave nothing out, and no one is off limits. There is only one truth, the rest is lies. Sit back, enjoy the education with a true daughter of Mother Earth. Sharp New York wit, spiritual knowing, and a very dry sense of humor, Maria will dissect the news and lies to make it all palatable. Education is power. Maria delivers rapid-fire truth like no one else can. Here she is, the mouth that roars, the legendary Maria Heller.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. Welcome to The Bigger Picture. And man, if we ever needed a time for the bigger picture, I would say 2017 is the time. With my excellent co-host, Michael Rakia, who is, his work is beyond wonderful. And you can check out his work at josephspeaks.com. I have a link here. I recommend every single book. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Maria. How are you?
I'm good. You know, I was on a news show in the UK yesterday for 2 hours, and I mentioned your work and gave out your website, and we talked a little bit about, you know, spirituality too, trying to figure out what's happening on this planet.
That's great. Thank you.
No, it was my pleasure. And I also want to let people know that you now have a Facebook page. Is it under Joseph Communications?
It is, yes.
Okay, so everybody can get over and join that page. Michael puts a great meme up every day. And on we go. So I know that you just started working on a new book.
Yes, after a 2 year recovery period, I suppose you could say. But there was an urgency to bring through a seventh book. And so we sat on Saturday morning, we sit once a month, and I was hoping that things would be as they had been, that I could reconnect with Joseph, and fortunately I can. But he's got a new suit, Maria.
He's got a new...
I used to see him in rather dowdy-looking clothes. They would either be, browns or something muted like that. But I saw him in yellow. I mean, I saw him for about a week before he reconnected with me. And there he is in this yellow jacket, very snazzy looking, very futuristic.
Wow, very interesting. That's very interesting because yellow is, you know, supposedly the color of high intellect.
Yes. And I always associate it with change as well. And it was a good connection. It was a great relief to know that we can still make that connection because there's still a lot to say.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. There's more to say today than ever before, I'm sure. Well, you know, yellow is also the color that a lot of people suggest you paint your baby's room in for mental stimulation. Yeah. So I'm not too surprised that he's upped his game, as we call it.
Yes.
Well, you know, my thing is always the same. My question is always the same. How much time, what have we done to the space-time continuum for human beings on this planet, looking at what's happening planet-wide right now?
Well, no information on that from Joseph. What we had was an introduction to what he's going to talk about. And I think I've mentioned before that the book is called The Spaces, or will be called The Spaces Between. And it's Joseph's intention to lift the corners, as he says, of the room and let you discover what's really going on, with you spiritually and what you are creating and projecting into this world and how to combat that and how to bring light into that to change things.
Mm-hmm.
I know you feel it's a very dark period, and I was thinking about this because we emailed each other a few days ago. I was thinking about what you said about the current state of things. And the problem we've got as spirits is that we're looking through the wrong end of the telescope. We look at politics and wish to change politics by more politics or by more physical actions and by more words and more arguments. But we have to realize that the political landscape that we see around the world has been created first by our thoughts as spiritual beings. by our perception of the world and our expectations of the world, and by the way that we buy into the negative aspects of the field of human consciousness that Jules is always referring to. And so what is happening politically, we have to tackle change from within, because the change that brought us to this point started from within.
Right.
We have to go within, and we have to change our view of how we want the world to be. There's no other way. We will never tackle it physically. We might put a band-aid on it. We might have wars. We might have skirmishes. We might have violence, and we think that we've arrived at peace. But we haven't. We really haven't. Because peace only comes when we change this world back to the planet it was supposed to be. And when we change ourselves back to what we truly are by remembering what we truly are. So we might be upset the way things are at the moment, but it's up to us and it's in our hands and in our power to change things. And we change things by daily going within for a quiet period, by ignoring what we think is happening in the world and pouring out into the world through light, through God light, the world that we want to see. A peaceful world. A world where we get on with each other. A world where there's enough for each other. And these are not just words. These are things that are attainable. But they're only attainable if we do something. And my goodness, the time to do something is now.
Oh, absolutely. No argument out of me on that one, for sure. But here's the other thing. How many people does it take to hold that vision? The majority of the planet seems to be insane right now. So it's like, how many people do we need to visualize a better world for it to actually stick?
We always say that, or Joseph always says, that one soul working for the light counters thousands of souls who are not working for the light, who are negative in their approach. The light, because it is what we are, it is an expression of God, is all powerful. And it is an analogy that you see every night when you go into your home from a dark street. You put the light on and you chase away the darkness. The darkness disappears. And so we have to hold true to that vision of a better world. And we know in past conversations that we've talked about before. We've talked about the experiment that went wrong many aeons ago that led to the world that we see at the moment. But even if that experiment once again leads to cataclysm, our job should be to illuminate in the meantime and get out as many souls as we can. So no working for the light, no time spent working for the light is ever wasted. It's ever wasted. It elevates the person who is sending out the light, and it elevates souls across the planet, and specifically souls who are ready to receive that light and to move on.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure you must have noticed that there seemed to be an extraordinary amount of people that died towards the end of last year.
Yes.
Are souls choosing to just leave the planet now more than before?
We've lost an awful lot of celebrities across the world. A lot of people that we grew up with have disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
We won't know that the answer to that until we're back there ourselves as to whether these people have decided that this is the last time for them.
Mm.
I hope it is the last time for them.
Right.
We will miss them,
right.
But I hope that they have decided that this has been their final incarnation and that they are now moving on through the spiritual spheres that lead to infinity and to greater bliss. Because as we've said many times before, Maria, we don't need to come back here.
Right.
We come back here from our own volition, and because we haven't investigated our spirituality.
Mm.
And so in many cases, souls leave this earth not believing in an afterlife, not having examined any true spiritual values. And when faced with the choice through free will of moving on into the spiritual spheres, are coming back to something that they are familiar with,
right.
No matter how nasty or negative that thing may be, that's the only choice they've made for themselves.
Right.
This is what is known. The spiritual side is unknown. Therefore, I choose to come back.
Right.
But unfortunately, if you choose to come back, you're choosing to come back to suffer.
Right.
You're choosing to come back to contribute through negativity to the world as it is at the moment. Far better to say, look, there's a light over there. Look, there's a beautiful landscape over there. I'm going to move into it. It may be unknown, but it's far better than what I've left behind.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, listen, I must say to myself, never come back about 100 times a day. So I'm getting that through to my subconscious one way or the other. But aren't there people here that didn't come here for those reasons, but volunteered to come here just to teach or to lead?
Yes, indeed. Yes. There are people who have imagined the sacrifice that have come here specifically to illuminate us. Not to dictate to us, but to bring through a way of life and a remembrance of who we are that puts us in touch with that which is lost in most people for the time being.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, there are two types of souls. There are those that want to come back for another ride, for another experience. And there are those who are trying their utmost to be a light in the darkness and teach other people how to be a light in the darkness so that we remember our spiritual home, our spiritual core. We seem to have become so dislocated from what we really are. I wonder how many souls across the world daily spare a thought for life, for the wonder of existence, and for where they are possibly going. We're all in the same boat. We're all moving in the same direction. It frightens me that so many souls move, travel, journey from life to death without giving any thought to what comes next and to any thought to if there is anything next.
Right.
And spending time investigating if there's anything next and deciding for themselves with the spiritual information that's available. I find it extraordinary that we're so tied into this life that we don't consider that there is another life, a greater life, and we don't consider that there is that there's something more than the societal life that we plug ourselves into daily.
Right.
We're chasing the dollar. We're chasing leisure. We're chasing enjoyment. But we don't chase spirituality. And I'm not talking about religion.
Right.
I'm talking about what we really are and investigating that. We've got to do that, surely.
Oh, for sure. You know, listen, I was always that way. But it was accused most of my life of pondering things way too much. But, you know, when I was a child and I learned how long turtles live, how long trees live, it just didn't connect in my brain that why would turtles and trees live longer than us when, you know, humans live to be 70 or 80 years old? But, you know, that was me. You know, I've always questioned everything and my mind goes into very strange places. But most of them are much more pleasant places than this one. I will say that. And, you know, like I always say, if I volunteered to come down here, when I'm back where I need to be, I'm going to kick my own ass for coming down here. If such a thing is possible, I'm going to give myself a good beating.
all things are possible, Maria.
Well, then I'm going to give myself a good ass kicking and say, never do that again. What were you thinking? Michael, I have a question for you from one of your fans and one of mine, of course. He's reading most of your books, he says, right now. He's not reading them in order. He's reading Illumination right now. And he has a question, and it's a little deep, but I can understand why he's asking the question, because it's a question a lot of people ask. He said, I thought about how the soul spirit isn't harmed by the often horrific experiences people go through in their lives. But then he watched a documentary about a woman who was held in captive for 18 years, raped, and had kids from the rape. And he's saying, you know, if this is the case, how could this really be? He says, how could she go through that and commit murder and get murdered with the soul not being harmed? But he says, how many times do you have to experience those experiences? When is it not enough? Or when is it enough? When have you done with that experience?
Right, when you decide it's enough. That sounds a very glib answer, but it ties in with the theme of what we've just been talking about. Don't come back. When we reincarnate, when we've decided to reincarnate, we inevitably draw around us the circumstances, the unfinished business of our past lives. Not the personality bit, but the dominant vibrations, the dominant themes in our lives. And if those, they inevitably draw towards us from the field because they are stored as a kind of magnetic history on a physical level. So as we come back here, automatically we start to pull towards us more of what has happened to us before. And we find ourselves in the same karmic loops going through the same thing again and again and again. Now, Joseph says that karma only applies here once we've got back into the field. So the way to negate karma is to say, I'm not coming here anymore. Enough is enough. And also we can do that whilst we're still physically here. I'm not talking about somebody who's in prison or can't get out of a situation immediately. Mm-hmm. But once we decide that enough is enough, we reject those vibrations from past lives. We reject those vibrations that have held us for so long, and we begin to loosen them so that eventually, and sometimes sooner rather than later, we escape from them whilst we are still in this life. Mm-hmm. Now, it seems terrible, doesn't it, that souls have to come here and suffer in this way? Right. And there's another sort of link to this, in that a lot of people then say, why does God allow it? Or even worse, why does God make it happen? Well, first of all, he doesn't make it happen. We do. We've got onto this broken merry-go-round again, and it's been our own choice. Mm-hmm. He allows it to happen because there is a universal constant, and that universal constant is free will.
Right.
We are God's children. We've been sent out to experience. We've been sent out to do whatever we want to do. To stop us doing that stops us being individuals, stops us being individual expressions of God. And so we have free will. We can turn right, we can turn left at any time. The problem is we turn repeatedly to the negativity of this world that we created at the time of the fall. So spiritual information is power, because spiritual information frees us from the type of lives that we have perhaps had to this time, and we believe to be the only options open to us. They're not. The power lies with us, but it's a matter of investigation and realization that what we're talking about is correct. By putting into practice some of the spiritual techniques that we've been given, and by sending out light not only to others, but to ourselves.
Right.
By changing ourselves through light and moving away from the negativity.
Exactly. I totally understand what you're saying, because just this past week, three of my Reiki students contacted me because of ailments and things they're going through. And I said to them, well, but are you Reikiing yourself? And, oh, I forgot. Or, oh, I didn't know I could do that. Or, you know, this and that. And I think we all tend to forget what we know to be true and what works for us, because we get tripped up by the matrix around us.
Yes, and sometimes we feel, don't we, that we're not deserving of giving ourselves light. We can give it out to everyone else, mm-hmm. but not to ourselves. But we strengthen ourselves through light. We make clearer contact with our spiritual memories through light. And of course we're deserving. Every person is deserving. As one of God's children, each of us is equally deserving, no matter what the outward appearance is.
Right.
So it's important that we spend time giving ourselves light. And as you said, Maria, in giving yourself light, you can heal yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You can spend that quality time rearranging the pattern of your body so that you get rid of the negative tendencies that might be causing you illness. You can bathe the affected areas of your body that are causing problems with light and see them change. It's happened time and again. I'm sure you've seen it happen, and it's happened with yourself time and again.
Oh, yeah.
We can put ourselves right. We can put ourselves right spiritually, and we can put ourselves right physically too. So it's a great benefit to us to, again, spend some time in the quiet, opting out of the world each day and tuning in to what we really are, to boost ourselves, to recreate ourselves, and to give ourselves the strength to do what is necessary.
Exactly. I wanted to add a little to the earlier question I gave you, because I think you pretty much answered it. When is it enough? When you decide it's enough. But he also had said these things can't be random. Do they happen for reasons we can't see? So my sense is he's asking if other people or other spirits create that karma or those lessons for us when we come down here. What would be the reason for it?
Well, we're one organism. This is something else that that unfortunately, as an effect of the fall, we've forgotten. We are all linked. We are all part of the same thing because we all come from the same thing. And so there are patterns that dance around us whilst we're here. Oftentimes we are reincarnated with people that we have known before, with spirits that we have known before. And because certain spirits are going through similar circumstances to us in what they're learning, we gravitate towards them and they towards us. So, yeah, the people around us are teaching us something, and we are teaching ourselves something. Not only that, but we are also teachers. We are teaching the people around us something. It's this interplay all the while of the pupil and teacher. And no experience is wasted. And no connection with anyone is wasted if we look for the right signs. So nothing is done in isolation. You can't do anything in isolation. You're not an isolated being.
Right.
And if we realize this, we would also begin to realize our power for change that we have within. So, we've got people around us that are teaching us things, but we are also contributing to their view of the world, and we are teaching them things. And the whole experience is teaching everyone something, if we would only observe the lesson and acknowledge it.
Right, right. Well, you know, another thing that he talked about, I don't believe you and I have ever talked about it. He said that he watched a documentary about a woman who believed that she was abducted by aliens and being experimented on. Do those things really exist? And why would somebody pick that for something to experience?
Yes, it's a strange one, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Sometimes that the physical mind tries to rationalize spiritual experience in terms that it, on a physical level, understands. My take on aliens, or Joseph's take on aliens and mine, is that we are in a kind of quarantine. He says, of course aliens exist, in that beings exist and go through experience on other planets. Of course, the universe is teeming with life. It's not teeming with anything else, because the planets are alive, the stars are alive, space is alive, as everything issues from the angelic host, and everything issues from God. But he says that because of the fall, we've got the equivalent of a keep-out sign around the planet. In other words, yes, you can visit here, but it's not advised.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of our visitors that we would potentially have from other planets do keep away until we've sorted ourselves out. But I do think that a lot of the experiences are sometimes, as I say, the physical mind trying to make sense of something spiritual. I don't see why other beings would be like us in their intent. As Joseph says, the rest of the universe isn't negative in the way that we are. We project onto our vision of what other life might be like concepts that are based on how we behave. And I cannot see any reason why other beings would abduct us and be violent towards us. I'd far rather see other beings educating us spiritually. But at the moment, that's not taking place. There's more of an observation taking place than an interaction.
Well, you know, years ago, I interviewed this woman. I believe her name was Mary Rodwell. And she had an organization, I believe, out of Australia for people that had nothing but positive experiences with what would be called alien abductions.
Yes.
So could it be the person's mental state or emotional spiritual state that sees them either as positive or negative?
Yes, we also have to understand the power of our spiritual mind. We are capable, quite literally, of conjuring up that which we believe to be true. That's the way we operate. That's the way that we originally created the planets.
Right.
By deciding that we wanted things to be in a certain way so that we could move through the journey of being born here and living here and going back to the spirit worlds from here. We decided that that was what we wanted to do, so we created it. Now, we're still at heart, and that's a very important phrase, at heart, spiritual beings. We still have that power to conjure up anything that we believe to be true in the measure that we believe in it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's kind of... I think it's kind of like how we assume what someone is thinking without actually asking them what they're actually thinking.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking about your last book, From Here to Infinity, where you talk about life on this planet as a film, a movie. And that we can alter the movie, and that, you know, sometimes we're the main star and we have a lot of, you know, a lot of co-stars and some people that are just, you know, crowds in our film. And I think that's a really good way to look at what we experience on this planet as, you know, not to sound corny, we're all players on the same stage.
Absolutely. Shakespeare was exactly right in that. And if we realize that, we can alter the script. If we're both the star and the scriptwriter, which we are, we can alter the script. Our problem is, after being conditioned for years and years and years to think that the world will only go worse, to think that things will only get more negative, we bought into that. And so we don't value the power of our own creative abilities. What we have to understand is that our creative abilities work equally well either negatively or positively.
Right.
So it is not believing in our positive power. We are pouring out negative creativity. We're maintaining the world in its negative state. We have to turn that switch from negative to positive and say, today my thoughts, my creative thoughts from my spiritual heart are going to make a real spiritual difference to my life, to the life of the people around me, and to the planet. And in the measure that we believe in that, our light that we send out has varying degrees of power. We have to understand that no thought that we think creatively lies dormant. It goes out there and it forms either negatively or positively. It's up to us to decide which of those two sides of the coin we link to.
Right. Well, you know, I think that there's a conflict in how a lot of people feel about the light. And I will blame it directly on, you know, the so-called New Age movement. Because a lot of New Age teaching through the decades were that you had no light. You had to meditate and bring the light into you. But from what I read in Joseph's communications, you are the light, and you just need to send the light out.
Absolutely. The light is you. It is what you are at core. It is what you are made of. It is your expression. You are a being of absolute beautiful, wonderful light. You are a highly creative angel. And it is your purpose in life, and I'm not talking about this life, I'm talking about the greater life, to create ever increasingly beautiful situations for you and your fellow angels to move through and experience so that you can take those increasingly beautiful experiences, the result of having moved through them, back to the Godhead. That's what you do as a child of God. That's what you really are. And if there are people this evening who are listening to this who are depressed, who are down, don't be. Because once you sweep away that film script that we've been talking about, at the heart of you lies a wonderful angelic being, a being of love, a being of creativity, a being of supreme light. That's what you really are. It doesn't matter what's going on outside and around yourself at this time. Those are illusions. You will get through them and past them. At your heart, you are a wonderful, wonderful child of God. Be uplifted in that. And in being uplifted in that, you lift up others too.
Absolutely. Very well said. Michael, we're going to go to a short break. Everybody stay with us. I have lots more coming up with Michael, so stay tuned.
Spiritual Professor is a name some of Maria's students and clients refer to her as. After a consultation or class with Maria, some have gone as far as calling her the Force or the Oracle. Maria is simply a woman, a mother, and grandmother who was born with a keen natural intuition. She's got a lot of life experience and she's a constant student herself. This is what qualifies her to help those who are on their journey and need some direction. Some students visit her in person, others on the phone or on Skype. Maria will work with you on your own timeline, guiding you down your best possible path. You can learn to balance the mind, body, and spirit in what seems to be a world gone mad. As David Icke says about Maria, Maria's the real deal, extremely intuitive but with her feet firmly on the ground, out there, but down here, no bullshit. Whatever you need in this part of your journey is what Maria will help you with. She'll give you the tools you need to make the rest of your life the best of your life. See private consultations with Maria on the site at meria.net and pick the one that resonates with you. You are not alone. The professor is in at meria.net. Now back to the show.
Okay, welcome back to The Bigger Picture with my co-host Michael Rechia. And you can check out his work at josephspeaks.com. I'm glad you have another book out. Hope we're all still here by the time it's finished so I can read it before I leave. But, you know, today we're talking a lot, you know, a lot of different things. But, you know, our conversation always seems to go where it needs to go for the particular day. From Here to Infinity, which is a great book, by the way, but I will tell you, I do have my favorite, I think you know by now, which is Your Life After Death, which I think everybody listening to the show today really needs to read it. And, you know, in crazy times, you really need to read that book. If you have it, reread it. I'm going to put it back by my bedside. Does Joseph give a definition of evil?
Yes, he does, yes.
What is his concept or definition of evil?
Yeah, it's not complex, but it's involved. What Joseph says is that evil at its heart doesn't start as evil. It starts as a recognition by someone that there is something outside of themselves that they don't like, mm-hmm. and that they can't deconstruct it because of the effects of the fall. You see, we're stuck in a kind of stasis here. In the normal course of things, as an angelic being, you would create whatever you wanted to create. Mm-hmm. You would experience whatever you wanted to experience by having created whatever you wanted to create. And then you would put away your toys completely. You would completely deconstruct that which you had created to leave room for something else that you wanted to create. Mm-hmm. We can't do that here because of the effects of the fall. We can neither create nor deconstruct effectively. If you look at mankind, we are based on layer upon layer upon layer upon layer of the past. We cannot get rid of our past experiences. They are still there.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I think the planet must be getting bigger because we're putting so much in the way of new flooring over the past.
Right.
So what Joseph says about evil is that it is a recognition at soul level that there is something that you don't like. You become afraid of it subconsciously, and so you try to have power over it or you try to destroy it. And at that point, it becomes distorted. So what he's actually saying is that all evil begins with a spiritual principle. And that spiritual principle is, here is something I want to sweep away. But then it goes sadly wrong, because we are trapped in this environment where we cannot sweep away that which we do not want to be associated with. Mm-hmm. And so becoming afraid of it, we therefore attempt to either dominate it or destroy it, neither of which we can do. And that's where people go wrong. And again, it's down to that light not having been switched on within the people who are perpetrating the evil. Mm-hmm. And those are the people that we, in turn, then think we must get rid of them. We've got to get rid of them. We're afraid of them. When, in fact, what we should be doing is sending the light to them out the most to fuel that pilot light that's within them, so that they suddenly have that aha moment and realize from within that what they're doing is skewed, what they're doing is mistaken, what they're doing is wrong, mm-hmm. what they're doing is evil.
Right. Well, okay, that makes sense. You know, on a simpler term, I remember Sun Bear, when I was studying with him, his definition of evil was a very simple one. It was like creating suffering for yourself or anyone else. That's all he said evil was, or a yeah. sin. Let's get back to the world that we do live in, because I was rereading parts of From Here to Infinity last night. Why would people want to maintain the effects of the fall? And this is something I try to explain to people. We can't change the system because people like the system the way it is. Why is that? Why do people want to maintain the effects of the fall?
Well, it goes back to our original decision. And that goes back aeons and aeons. It goes back to the experiment that went wrong. And at that point, we as a group of angelic children decided that we had a way of creation that we could take back to the Godhead that would be more efficient than the way that creation took place and takes place in the rest of the universe. And we were advised at the time that it wouldn't work, that it would lead to upset, that it would lead to an imbalance in the way that things are. Mm-hmm. But we believed wholeheartedly, hand on spiritual heart, that we were right. And so as a result of this, and as a result of a gentle debate, not a battle, not a war in the heavens, but a gentle debate that went backwards and forwards for millennia, we decided that we were going to go ahead with this experiment anyway. We knew better than the people that were advising us that it wouldn't work. And at that moment, when we took the decision to create in a different way, we were plunged into the effects of the fall. But the problem is, at core, we still believe we're right. We still believe it was the right move. Hmm. And so everything that we do stems from that subconscious position of still believing that we're right. And we've got to let go of that. We've got to say, yeah, we tried this. It didn't work. Let's get back to the way things were.
Right.
Let's create and deconstruct creation as we used to do as an angelic host before we trapped ourselves. Mm-hmm. So everything goes back to that decision. And we still have that, if you like, imprinted in us. We still have that belief. We are right. And don't you see that in mm-hmm. so many political factions, in so many movements around the world? We're right. We're right. There's no other way. We are right. And it is the effects of the fall surfacing time and time and time again until we choose something different.
Exactly. Well, you know, I was reading, that was part of the book I was reading last night, you know, why it's so hard for people on this planet to say I was wrong.
Yeah.
And then why is it so important for people to have to be right? Do you know what I mean? So it's almost like another trap. To me, it looks like a trap. You know, the other night I had some friends over and we were just, you know, having some conversation. And, it, you know, I thought the subject was pretty trite. But Cuba came up in the conversation. And I said, well, you know, Obama opened up Cuba. You know, we can travel to Cuba now and all this. And for whatever reason, One of my friends said, no, we didn't. And no, we didn't. And we can't do that. And the only thing you can do is get cigars from Cuba. And I realized that instead of arguing back and forth with him, I just looked at him and I said, okay. And it was about at least a half hour later, he got on his phone and he researched it when the rest of us weren't really paying attention. And then he had to come back and admit that I was right. But for me, it wasn't about being right. What I looked at was, this isn't even important to argue over. If it means that much to him, I'll let him have it. You know what I mean?
Yes, yes. Because we take defensive positions, don't we? We don't discuss things. We discuss things as long as they are harmonious with what we believe in. And the minute that that switches, we start to build defenses around ourselves. We start to dig in and we start to say, no, I'm right. This is my viewpoint.
Right.
And I'm right. When we should be saying, it's only a viewpoint. There are other viewpoints.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I let my viewpoint go if it's going to threaten you and cause harm to you and be violent towards you, then it's not worth defending this viewpoint. I've got to defend my spiritual viewpoint and examine that. And from the spiritual perspective, we can step back from those arguments.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I've learned over the years from Joseph and from hopefully from a little bit of spiritual evolution is to step back from anger. If you find yourself getting angry, examine why you're angry and examine the effect that anger is having on yourself and others and step back from it. Become detached from it. Defuse it. Don't pour further anger into the field.
Mm-hmm.
And with practice, that can be done so that in every situation, situations that would normally have caused you to explode, you think, no, I shouldn't be doing this. Let me step away from it. Look at it from the spiritual viewpoint, and it dissipates.
Right.
And if enough of us did this as well, then it would be far easier to get the light out into the world.
Right. Well, you know, back in the day, when people wanted to be that argumentative with me, I knew the best way to shut it down was be to just say, you could be right. And that would end the conversation. But when I said, you could be right, in my head, I was saying, you're an idiot, and I'm not going to argue with you. So people that know me know when I say you could be right, then I'm actually saying the opposite to whoever it is I'm talking to.
Yeah.
But if it's something I know to be true, that I've researched and whatnot, I'm always 100% sure of what I'm saying, but I'm not going to argue it with people. To me, it's like, do your own homework.
Yes, yes. Discover it for yourself.
Right. But I think a good thing to do, and I recently learned this from a friend, is, and it could be in interpersonal relationships, anything else in your life, just stop and ask yourself this simple question. How important is it?
Yeah.
And I think everybody makes things way too important to themselves. You know?
Yes,
and being right is a big one. I mean, God knows how many relationships break up over that.
Yes, over some small thing. Yes.
Yeah, so then you're like, where's the love?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, you know, my Sicilian mother used to say, if this is love, give me hate. She had so many good zingers, I kind of miss them every now and then. All right, let's jump ahead a little bit to the life review. Okay.
Yeah.
A lot of people have the conception that the life review is a punishment, like there's 12 judges sitting on a cloud somewhere berating you for what you did or did not do. In this life. Now, my sense is the life review is more like looking at an annotated film of your own life to see if you accomplished what you wanted or not.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, you are reviewing. You are reviewing, no one else. You just mentioned judgment. There is no judgment. It's putting all those experiences in front of you and you looking at them from a spiritual perspective, the spiritual perspective we've just been talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing how each experience either elevated you or trapped you, and how each experience either benefited someone else or degraded someone else in some way, and learning from that, And the greatest lesson that can be learned at the end of the life review is that I don't have to go through that again. I can refine myself here in the spiritual spheres. I can move on, and I can illuminate myself on this journey rather than having to go back to Earth. And we can, as we review our lives, it's a great benefit to us. It unlocks so much about ourselves. Mm-hmm. And it allows us to think, well, that's why that happened. That's where I attracted this situation. That's why I was connected with that situation. And as you've just said, certain situations, to look at them and think, well, all these years I felt that was so important, but it didn't really matter. What mattered was the underlying spiritual pattern, and that's what I've learned from, and that's what's brought me to this point. So nothing to be afraid of in the life review. Now, I'm sure we sort of look from behind our hands at certain points and say, oh, how embarrassing. You know,
right? Oh, what a jerk I was! Right?
Yeah, how could I possibly have done that? But as you say, there's nobody there to judge us for that life that we've just lived. There are people there to advise us, and they're advisors without criticizing, without judging, and with the intention of elevating us so that we can move on from that life, having taken from it the points that we were supposed to take. So, in a way, I welcome it. I welcome the life review. I think, oh, yes, that's what it was about. And I did okay here, but not so good here.
Right.
Now I'll move on and sharpen up and polish up those areas that I need to sort out in order to move back to God and back to infinity.
Well, you know, there's been so many TV shows, movies, etc., you know, where they show you similar things of people seeing their past lives or whatever. So in a way, some of them are comedies and some of them are really good. But what I'm noticing is there's a lot of new time travel TV shows.
Yes.
So knowing what predictive programming is. I wonder, well, okay, what are they trying to convince us of? But then when I look at some of these shows, they have a lot of truth in them, and I think they could be very uplifting.
Yes. Yes, so there's Timeless on tonight over here in the UK.
I love that show. I just watched it last night.
Yes, yes, it's a good show. I'll be watching it myself later on.
So let me ask you.
We time travel all the time, don't we? We have that ability to time travel all the time. Because at any one time, we are able to speculate as to the future, but also to access our past experiences. And it's very strange. When I come back from trance for a couple of days, it's as though all the connections that usually connect me to what we would describe as the present are not in place. And there are memories and experiences, very tactile, that fire themselves off at random. And I realize that I am still living in all of those experiences at the same time. Very difficult to explain, but very, very real. And then it fades as I've got to connect with this point in time, for want of a better phrase, and get on with my life from this point onwards. But we do live all those experiences at once. And we do relive them from the point of view that we're at any particular time in our lives. And we do spend a lot of energy reliving them. And we do waste a lot of energy reliving them. And we do make ourselves ill by reliving them. And we do visit them again and again and again from that point of view of, I was right. Mm-hmm. One of the most liberating things we can teach ourselves to do is to let go, to revisit various points in our lives, yes, but to look at that situation and say, do I still need to immerse myself in the energy of it?
Mm-hmm.
Or do I need to let it go and move on? Not let the memory go,
right.
Not let the experience go, but let the point of view that we have that can be damaging let go.
Right. Well, you know, that's another interesting chapter in your book. And I was like, okay, this might be hard to wrap everybody's head around when you talk about the fact that memory doesn't exist.
Yes.
I mean, that's pretty deep because everybody lives for their memories. People are always afraid if they get dementia or whatever, they're going to lose their memories and not know who they are.
Yes.
And then here you pop out with memory doesn't exist.
No, we simply experience, and we appear to experience things in a linear fashion. But that, again, is an effect of the fall. And it's difficult to explain to people because they will think, how can you not experience things linearly? And I always liken it to a game show we used to have here in the 70s and 80s called The Generation Game. And at the end of The Generation Game, you would sit behind a little sort of cut-out window, and there would be a conveyor belt in front of that cut-out window, and things would pass by, and you had to remember them at the end of the game to take them home as prizes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all those things are passing by at the same time, but you can only concentrate on one or two of them. It doesn't mean the others don't exist. It just means that you haven't placed your concentration on other specific items other than the ones that are in front of you. And that's how we experience. We can choose from our life experience what we want to put energy into. It's all still there. We've moved on from it in a linear fashion, but we haven't moved on from it in a spiritual fashion. And this takes us back to the life review, because when we see the life review, everything is there as fresh as it was at the moment when it happened. It's still there. That energy is still there. What we do with that energy is up to us. And what a lot of us unfortunately choose to do with that energy is to look at it as a negative memory from the past.
Mm-hmm.
I'm bitter about this. I'm upset about that. How could somebody have done this to me? Why didn't I do that? I've lost that opportunity. And we give those live memories, those live experiences, form and energy. We continue to invest in them in a negative way. So a good sweep out is a great idea on a weekly basis.
Mm-hmm.
To say, yes, I've got the memories, as it were, I've got the experience still, but what do I think of that experience? How have I coloured that experience, and how is that experience colouring me? And if it's colouring you in a negative way, in a restrictive way, in an unspiritual way, let it go.
Exactly. A good way of letting it go is just say, I'm letting this go. I'm sending it out to the universe and let it go dangle somewhere else.
Yes, as simple as that. Yes.
Right, because I think a lot of people make themselves so miserable over their memories, and I've always advised people, if the past already ruined your past, why would you give it another minute in the present or the future?
Yes, yes. Pulling it into the present to ruin today and tomorrow and the day after.
Right.
So there's no necessity to do that at all.
Absolutely.
Yes.
It's just insanity.
Let energy in.
Mm-hmm. Well, Michael, as usual, another speedy hour with you, but one of the best hours of my week was I didn't have to talk about the world. At least I'd rather talk about the other worlds and home. Maybe that's why E.T. was so anxious to go home.
Yes, you have the right idea.
Well, thank you so much, and keep me posted, of course, on the new book.
I will, Maria. Thank you. It's been a great pleasure.
Always. I'll talk to you again soon.
See you very soon. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Michael Richie, check him out at josephspeaks.com. If you want hope, let me tell you something. The only hope is realization on this planet of who you are. Or as Demon David Icke, I think he had a book titled, Remember Who You Are. And not get trapped up in the madness, which is, of course, easy to do, especially when I'm stuck reporting on it. But that's okay. I laughed through a lot of it, and then I let it go. Anyhow, thanks for supporting the show. Share the information you get with people you know. Encourage them to support the show because everybody needs the information that I give out here. I don't just do this for myself. I do this for people that need the information. And in these days, we all need it. Anyhow, I'll be back tomorrow with news of Planet of the Apes. And on Friday, it'll be Stars R Us. We'll look at the astrology for the month with Joe Anthony. Thanks again for listening and supporting the work.
Thank you for listening and supporting the Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. get active, or get radioactive. Subscribe today.